by Apex and Westwave Audio. Now from the Nowcast Network Studios, here's Mike.
Hey, welcome to the Nowcast. My name is Mike Rodriguez. And before we get going, let me introduce the guys. Over here on my right,
we've got Scott Gershon.
Hello! Oh, sorry, I thought it was Bobby for a second.
And next to him, we've got Diego Stecco.
Hey, Mike.
And next to him, we've got Brandon Bertine.
What's up, Mike?
And next to him, we've got Forrest Robinson.
Auto-tune's a hell of a drug.
And next to him, we've got Bill Burgess.
Yo, yo.
And over here on my left, we've got the one and only Iron Man of the Audio Nowcast, Rob. I've never missed a show, Arbiter.
We should make sound effects just when he says that.
Yeah, like, it's good to be here.
And today, joining us on the Audio Nowcast, we have a special guest. His name is Michael Bard. And he's a composer, he's a mixer, he's a producer, he's just one really talented individual. And Michael, thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you guys for having me. Yeah, yeah. Woo! I'm happy to be here.
And just so you know, Michael mixed one of the, and I think you composed the soundtrack, right, for one of the best PBS documentary series out there, which was Nerds 2.0. And,
I did. It's all about Bill Gates in his garage and Steve Jobs and
wow, that's cool.
Yeah, I mean it's a pretty cool story.
Yeah, when it came out, it was
all about Al Gore and how he invented the internet.
How to be a nerd in on the world, right?
Yeah, that's right.
So, welcome and feel free to chime in at any minute and cut Scott off whenever you want to.
He's going to sit next to me and we could be like stereo. So you got to do this.
What you got to understand is they are like brothers. They're not like identical twins, but they definitely could be like fraternal twins.
Cousins.
Similar DNA.
That's right. Somewhere down the road. Well, anyhow, but before we get going, I just wanted to talk about a couple things. Number one, right off the bat, we have been having some massive problems with our webpage. I don't know if any
Did
of you
Did we
guys...
have a webpage?
Thanks, yeah. And so I just want to apologize if you've gone to the website. It is all fixed. It was hellacious and it was scary. And I didn't even have to call Rob once.
No, I didn't get a call.
to get it fixed. But basically what the installation of WordPress, we needed to update because what happened is we actually got like a virus. Somebody got in there and hacked every single one of our PHP files.
Oh,
and every single one had this malicious code. And so all the web browsers wouldn't even load the page. So you'd go to our website and you'd just get a white page because it wouldn't load it. Because it was a pretty common hack that happened.
Oh.
It's just that I hadn't upgraded in a while.
So we're all fixed now?
We're all fixed. We're running the latest version of WordPress and the latest version of PodPress. And what's really cool is, you know, these are open source tools and they have a great, great community out there. It's a really vital thing for people nowadays with software because a lot of times you feel like you're on an island and all you really have to do is just find another computer that is working and go on the internet and you start picking up all this information. You know, I want to encourage people that are listening that if you have a problem, hit the boards.
Or call Rob.
That's what I was doing.
But I just hit the board. So
1-800-ROB
by default.
But I wanted to start and ask you guys, have you guys ever just been so frustrated that the only place you had to turn was just to the internet and you just start going to hit to
the first place I turned.
When was the last time you went to the internet and relied on it to answer a question? I mean,
all the time.
Put it this way, I haven't used the phone for tech support in 5 years.
Now, what are the really good, besides the Audio Nowcast? Now,
I went yesterday really to find out what was happening with my car.
Well, and the reason why I asked this, and I know it's pretty obvious, and I knew that was the answer, is I get a lot of emails from listeners and they ask some of the questions. And you know what? By all means, keep asking the questions. But you know that our turnaround on answering questions is a long time.
Hey, you get a lot of questions. It takes time.
So I'm just saying, you know, before you write that letter, and by all means, you can send the email. And if you want to hear our opinion, that's great. But, you know, there's some really great places on the internet. You know, there's like boards like GearSluts and Harmony Central and places like that.
Northern Sounds.
Yeah. I mean, what are some of the places that you guys go to when you want to get a question answered.
Well, there's some different ones, and each one has a different type of audience, we can say.
Right.
You got Northern Sounds, then you got KBR, then you got Gear Slots.
KBR is good.
Yeah. Mostly, I think it's when you have a problem, you go to the forum to see if someone else had the same problem.
Right.
Manufacturer.
So you don't panic, at least.
Right. The forum, but the forum from the whatever the manufacturer is.
Yeah. Well, but sometimes some manufacturers don't keep a company's forum for whatever reason they might have. But and some forums actually, you know, they might remove some information. So you just go on a public forum and see if this is a common problem. And that is a starter. And then there you can find someone that helps you fix the problem, maybe.
Sometimes I find that I spend a lot of time sifting through crap.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, you know.
You know, there's one thing that sometimes happens. People go on forums. They just start complaining forever. Do they call tech support? No. That should be the first thing. I mean.
You're right. You're absolutely right.
They do it.
There's people that they troll.
Really, they get pissed to the maximum level. And when you ask, did you contact tech support? No, because.
You
know what?
All over.
There's a certain responsibility. If you're going to be, you know, joining in on the discussion, there is definitely a responsibility to, you need to do your own due diligence.
But you know what? A lot of the people on those boards complaining are using cracked versions of the software, and they don't have a serial number, and they can't call tech support. And seriously, that's definitely...
Yeah. The first step is to search the PDFs for the app.
If you go to Google or Yahoo and you say, you know, what the problem is and the product, a lot of times it takes you to some very interesting places, and that's how sometimes you find that Gear Sluts or other forums that are
the
open.
Forums are really
because I've done
open.
Stuff where all of a sudden I said I had a problem with a Drobo server.
Yeah, right.
And all of a sudden I went, oh, what's the problem? And all of a sudden I wrote it down and bing, yeah, that's a problem. Hmm. And then it said you got to go to this firmware and blah blah blah. And then you eventually get to Drobo and then you find it out. And a lot of times it's faster than if you go to forums trying to find. That.
Absolutely.
No,
the
that's
forums
true.
Are. There's a lot of noise up there.
Right.
I mean,
a lot of noise.
A lot of people don't realize that every app has a searchable PDF right in it. It just helps.
Well, you know what?
You can search the manual right there.
RTM. Read the manual.
Yeah. But I search the manual first, and then sometimes I use Logic Pro Help a lot. They got about 35,000 members, and it's based here in LA. That's for Logic, but you can really enter specific problems, big long problems in Google.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Totally. I mean, just the longer the better, and then that weeds a lot of stuff.
I find the manual, though, sometimes it reminds me of like when you used to program BASIC. You know, go to line 23. Now go to line 106. Now go back to line 2. You know, and you're flipping pages.
But if the information's there, it's worth the hunt.
Well,
sometimes it's less than helpful. That's for sure.
Let me ask the manual guru. Rob, because Rob's probably read more manuals.
I do like reading manuals.
Okay,
now let me ask you: when you read your manuals, do you read them front to back, or do you just specific? Or do you like
I know it
areas?
Sounds crazy. I actually do try to read them front to back,
really?
Even if it's a quick reading, and then I use them as a reference after.
Right.
But if you haven't been through it once, you kind of don't know whether it's a useful reference or not.
Well, right, and when I do the same thing, I get a piece of gear. Sorry, I read the manual.
Right.
I mean, you know, it's not boring. You know,
no, it's like a thriller.
Because then you're going to try to accomplish something, try to do something, and you've seen it in the manual.
Right.
I mean, if you have a brain.
Well, you know, the really good trend nowadays that I think for me, I mean, I read manuals, but I tend to skim manuals. I would say I don't actually read them front to back. I will get enough to get up and running. I like to hit buttons and click things and just kind of experiment.
But you know also why people like forums? Because they feel it's part of a community thing. So you go there, you can say, guys, I had a big problem. So you had people say, oh, I'm sorry. So you feel the love, which is an important thing because you might be extremely frustrated about something. So first of all, they let you feel that someone else had the same problem. And then they might help you fix the problem. But still...
I gotta say, I find it shocking that Logic users would have a giant support group.
I knew that. Yes. Not the far north. open. Rob Arbiter, I knew you were going to come after me.
Right. It was right there. It was right there.
I left the barn door swinging. I mean, I had nobody to blame but myself.
Thank you for that, by the way. That was a gift. You know, 2 days ago was my birthday. I will accept that as a gift.
It is the only gift you'll be receiving
really
from me.
Nice.
That was patient.
And he waited to twist the knife, I noticed.
Totally.
Timing is everything.
I don't have to worry because the Logic users are too confused to find the podcast anyway.
There are, like, it is boggling. My friend David started the website, and there was 5,000 members. Now there's almost 40,000 users up there.
Wow.
But it covers all of Logic Studio, so...
Right.
Don't mock me.
Is it an easy form to join, or is there like an environment window where you go?
Oh my god!
But actually, it's easy to join because there are 30 commands to join it all over the screen.
Right, but if you press one, if you press one, they just send you to KVR. Two to Pro Tools.
I'm getting.
It's
my turn waiting.
No, I'm being hit with a blunt instrument.
I spent 8 hours.
Just stay.
I spent 8 hours on the plane yesterday. I just wrote like 4 hours of Logic shtick.
Wow.
We're getting started.
He's here all week, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah,
shows up on it. It's a bit wild.
Did you know he's endorsing Logic then?
Endorsing the antidote.
Okay, well, getting back to what we were talking about. But that was brilliant, though. That was well worth the trip.
No, but he brings up a good point. There are some deep dives in Logic. And it does a lot of stuff that you don't know about.
But I will say the trend I was talking about before we kind of sidetracked, though, was and it applies to Logic, actually, the video trend. You know, you can get a lot of information now watching videos. Like, Camel Audio, I just picked up Alchemy. And they do a – by the way, Alchemy?
Yeah, very
awesome.
Cool.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Don't look at me, though, okay?
I was going to mention Lynda.com. Anybody use Lynda.com?
I've talked about Lynda.com.
Oh, I have a friend that actually makes
Yes, my wife's name is Lynda. You're right. But spelled differently.
The monster of audio stuff is Mac Pro Video, though.
Yeah.
They have the best, the biggest site for pro audio.
Well,
and they do Pro Tools, Ableton, all of it. Because the Pro Tools guys need a lot of help, actually.
Yeah, they do. No, they do, actually. I'm not arguing.
All that to say is, you know, just what I originally said is, you know, there's a lot of communities out there. And if you're not alone. And obviously, if you're listening to the podcast, you are on the internet, you know, there's definitely places to go. So if you do send in a question and I don't happen to get to it right away.
Call Rob.
Call Rob. Or go to Logic.
Or go to Logic Pro Help.
Yeah.
And they're off.
But let me segue, though, talking about the other thing I wanted to talk to you about is I picked up Alchemy from Camel Audio. And that was a – what's wrong, Diego?
No, no.
Do you not like Alchemy?
No.
We just need to work in TDM, though. Or –
if you could input
go ahead.
Or if you could input your own audio into Omnisphere and use it as a sampler.
I love Omnisphere. Omnisphere is phenomenal. I mean, but you got to have a lot of flavors. You got to have
one synth in your arsenal.
Yeah. You know, there's a lot of love to go around.
Granular synthesis in Alchemy is really, really cool.
Yeah, absolutely. It was Rob. Do you use Alchemy?
I haven't been using it myself because we've been doing. Just other kinds of work.
All right.
But I've seen it, and I think it's pretty awesome. I'm definitely going to start using it.
We put it into all our sound design systems.
See why.
We just said that. The problem we're running into, those Pro Tools-based system, and right now it's still VST, and I think the RTAS isn't out yet.
Really?
Yeah.
You know what? It's not too often that a synth comes out that truly sounds different.
Right.
And so when something like that comes out, there's been a lot of talk about it.
Yeah, no, it was Brandon actually turned me on to it, and he said, "You got to get this."
What are you using it, and what platform?
Cubase and Ableton.
Yeah, okay. It works, and it actually works in Logic
and what are you
too.
Using? Oh, okay,
Logic and Ableton.
See, Ableton.
I can learn.
You're able to.
But
how do you used to say it? You used to say
Ableton.
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 Ableton. Ableton live.
Ableton live.
So it would work in Performer. I'm a Performer user. Oh, my God.
But it would work
Scott
on Performer.
Here. Here.
If it's VST.
Yeah.
Performer, you know what?
What about Alchemy do you guys like?
Well, for one thing, the sounds, you know, there's the different types of sound. You can
a lot
do
of
granular,
synthesis.
But you can do synthesis. I mean, it's just you can import your own samples. The automation is phenomenal. I mean, there's just
how much does it cost?
Cheap.
It's
$399 or something.
Was it like
$200 maybe?
Yeah,
$300.
Yeah, it's a typical, you know, under $300.
You can buy like their whole all the because then they have sound design packs that you can buy and even with all the sounds, like I bought their big pack and it was only like $599 or something like that with all the different sound sets that they have.
So what does it compare to, like Predator or Omnisphere or?
It's not. I don't think Omnisphere though.
Yeah, the guy who did Predator.
Predator, Rob Papen.
Yeah, it's like Papen stuff on steroids.
It's like an
Oberheim. It's got an arpeggiator.
It's like an Oberheim Expander software version.
Does it have it? Yeah, because it has to have.
I mean, it has a lot.
Except you got an arpeggiator in it.
Except you can put your old samples into it.
Right. Because all of the Papen stuff does.
But you know, the good thing is actually the fact that it doesn't sound like an Omnisphere, because if you have Omnisphere, it definitely. Really complement. They complement each other.
They
really
do different
well.
Things.
Yeah, exactly.
They're both interesting synths,
right.
And they have
absolutely
flavor and everything.
I think I really like Omnisphere better for the sounds that come with it and what you can do with it as a synth. But if you want to use it, a sampler.
It's a processor, yeah. I mean, I think of Alchemy as more of a processor than let's bring up a piano.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Right. You're absolutely right.
But, and Omnisphere is not about that anyway. But
Yeah,
I see what you mean, though. Yeah, I didn't try it yet, so that's why I can't really say too much about it. But I read good stuff, and as a sound designer, I can see it's a useful tool and everything.
Absolutely, and the thing about it is it's the kind of thing that invites you to go in and start tweaking, because the stock sounds are okay. I mean, they're not bad. They're not nearly as good as some of the stock Omnisphere sounds by far. but they're okay. But the magic is when you start playing with it. When you start playing with it and you start importing your own samples, you know, and
I think that's ultra critical, because the point is not to sound like everybody else.
Right.
And that's what happens when a library becomes popular. I mean, like when Atmosphere became popular, you know, all the world was just a commercial for Atmosphere. You could just listen to the radio and pick out, oh, that's from Atmosphere then.
To that point, for the last 2 years, people come to me to beef up their drums, to make their drums better. Had more hefty, and they're always Stylus RMX.
Uh-huh.
And it was great when it came out, and it's just been hammered
to death.
It just
gets overused, yeah.
It's totally overused.
But besides the library itself, you know, it's an instrument that, you know, you can do much more with that.
But a lot of people don't ever get to that stage.
I know, but for example, in Omnisphere now, you have the entire library of Atmosphere, and you can take those original samples and bring them to a whole different level.
You know what? You're absolutely right, and that's one of the best
things. And granular is in Omnisphere too.
Yeah.
So.
The thing I like about Omnisphere is the fact of all the, you know, you can take those original sounds and tweak the bejeebies out of it. And I think, you know, the same is with Stylus, though. You can do the exact same thing with the sounds in Stylus with between the effects and the chaos and all that. I mean, there's a lot of really great things. But what happens is people get lazy and they're provided with such a good palette that they don't want to mix their own colors. And so that, you know, and when you have to do, I can't blame them, because if somebody comes up to a composer and says, hey, you know, you need to do this and this and this, and you've got a night, you know what? It's going to be preset central. I mean, I'm sure Michael,
being
a composer, you're aware of that.
Well, there's no way that you have the, I mean, I do a lot of commercials.
Right.
And there's no way that you have the luxury of the time to be able to go in and actually be creative at that level, you know? So it's good that these products come with good libraries.
I've seen more 4ADLs on Bank One, Program One.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not joking. I mean, you go to like dubbing stages and it's Bank One, Program One.
Tell people what the 4ADL is.
Oh, it's a lexicon reverb that's been around for 1,000 years.
The one with the...
The remote.
The little
with faders
that you
on
see.
It.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, and then just the people just, you know, that sounds pretty good. Adjust the time and there you go.
But, you know, you bring up a good point, though. You know, what separates an average mixer, an average composer from a great mixer, a good mixer, and a good composer's, a lot of times isn't anything other than just having a little bit of creativity in there, you know? Taking time to do your own reverbs, taking time to create your own patches, taking some time to just make something unique, and then using those tools, a lot of times they'll get people like, hey, what are you doing there? Or, what's that like?
It would be just a matter of trying, because if you think about it, you know, in the days when you were using, you know, DX7, okay, right. It was a challenge, you know.
Oh, yeah.
But now, I don't know, with Omnisphere, even just by moving layers a little bit, right. You do a little bit of editing and you can make your own sound. So, but.
I totally agree. And it actually circles back to the first topic, because I had written some string parts for a little short movie, and the guy came back and said, your reverbs are wrong.
Hmm.
And I was like, didn't know that. And so I said, well, you got any suggestions? He said, go get the Todd AO. And I'm like, and so I went to the forums, Todd AO, and I found a Sharp transient up on the web.
It was talking about a convolution reverb.
Soundstage, the one that is gone now.
Yeah. Right for stage, huh?
Yeah, and so it's where Star Wars was mixed or recorded. It's where a lot of films were recorded, so it's got a familiar sound. So I went up, I found it, I found the transient, and I loaded it into Space Designer in Logic,
right.
Made my own Todd AO reverb, and I'm like, all right, let's see if these guys are right. And I stuck it up on some strings, and I went, oh, my gosh.
You should try the brass.
It took my breath away in the sense of it was eye-opening, because I was like, oh, so that's a little secret sauce.
Yeah.
And I got that through searching the web, having a problem, going up to the forums, and you can find anything up there, of course.
You know what I find is all these people shed, they get really good, then they get in the business, they do very well. And what you constantly have to do is actually take a vacation and shed again. Because a lot of times, when you're very good and you're very popular and you're successful, you're very busy. And then what happens is when you get very busy, you just don't have the time to experiment. So what happens is you got your bag of tricks, 4 or 5 years go by, and you're like, yeah, and you realize you're using the same bag of tricks. You have to go out and kind of shed again. Learn the
absolutely.
Gear.
Absolutely.
And a lot of people don't. Amazing amount of people don't. But until the new kid comes up,
right.
Who knows a new bag of tricks, who plays the same cycle.
You know, that I can't agree with you more, because what bugs me a lot of times is when you see people using the same mix template that they've used for you know, 5 years with the same plugins, doing it the same way, and yet you go and you look at their Pro Tool system or whatever system, and they have all these other plugins, and it's like, you know, how do you know you want to use that plugin on that when you have all these other ones, you know? And like in my template that I set up, actually I don't even use a template. I just know how I'm going to do it. I know I'm going to have this many auxes, I'm going to have this many master faders, and I'm going to bring my OMFM like this. And then, you know, I listen to it, and then I'm always changing different things and doing sidechaining on this thing and that, because it just keeps you sharp. It keeps you using all the tools. And every once in a while you just stumble onto something like,
I like this approach too.
Yeah.
You got to listen, man.
Yeah.
But you can't be snobby about it either, because I've got a lot of sound design friends. They're like, what? You've used the same sound effect more than once in your life? How you have to go out and get everything brand new?
Well, no.
And I'm like, have you ever worked on a gig for real?
I mean, there's that whole time versus versus production.
It's like, it's midnight. I want to go home. Yeah. So.
I mean, Rob, like a situation like yours, you have a lot of gear, both analog and digital. Are you heavily templated? And if you are, when do you put in the creativity?
You know what?
I
think it's much more important to learn the tools than to learn a template. And I think the key is to understand the tools in your arsenal. And I mean, I do have a lot of stuff and a lot of plugins and a lot of stuff. My goal is always to master each instrument and each plugin, so that when a project comes up, I can go in my memory and think of what would be the right tool to use at that instance. I mean, there are some templates I've set up for, like, I've been doing these colossal film mixes mixes that are incredibly complicated, and the deliverables, you know, we're sometimes delivering 50 tracks wide and all these different configurations. I do have some templates just for the I/O routing, because I could recreate it each time, but it takes a lot of time.
It's not
really creative.
But part of it, I mean, the part of being really good at what you do is knowing how to get there pretty quickly.
Right.
And if templates can aid you and you use them correctly, that's fantastic. But at the same time,
but not if it excuse me, but not if it stops you from using your tools. Not if it stops you from knowing the tools.
I mean, you know, it's interesting because, like, I bought, I remember, Oxford EQs. Oh, I loved them, and then I actually started playing with them, and I go, I actually hate these. So then I started playing with the EQs for sound design, and I'm like, wow, everything sounds harsh. I don't like the sound. And it went there, but I spent all this money on them. So then I went, and occasionally I would go back to them. So I was doing a mix about a year and a half, 2 years ago. And I said, yeah, God, I spent all this money on those Oxford EQs. And I said, you know, I should just try them. And I always do this. I always go in, I got a little bit of mix time, so I always try something I haven't used in a while. But instead of using it on sound design, I actually used it on music. And I thought,
oh, they're beautiful.
They're beautiful in music. So I put them in music, and I'm like, wow. Meanwhile, I like the McDSP Channel G. Love it for sound effects. Love it for dialogue. Music, it's a little unfocused. So what I found was, just because you have an EQ, like Oxford sounds beautiful for music. I love the way it sounds. Very musical. And some people go, well, an EQ is an EQ. And I'm like, not even.
Not
at all. So it is interesting that
even the Oxford has multiple modes. It can sound like different EQs.
Absolutely. You know, so it's interesting to try different plugins at different times,
right,
and experiment with them and you know, see where it is.
No, that's so true, especially on things like EQs where you really
– and compressors.
Well, yeah. Any of those plugins where the only time you're going to know the difference is when you actually put them to use in a live situation, when you actually have to do something with them.
And even the ratty ones, like Ultra Pitch. I mean, I love the Waves guys, but Ultra Pitch pretty much sucks. But then I had a project that I needed this really odd sound, and all of the pitch devices were too good. Everything was really good, and I went, I need something just not sounding like everything else and not being pure. I bought that Ultra Pitch thing out, and I haven't used this one ages. It was beautiful. For that for that project, it was so funky that it was perfect for that scenario.
And the trick is to know your arsenal of tools so that you can think of trying something like that.
All right, well, we're going to take a break right now, and when we come back, we're going to talk about high-end microphones, because we've been trying to talk about this for the last two podcasts, and now we're going to do it.
It's about time.
All right, so we'll see you on the other side.
You're listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by Aphex and Westwave Audio. Have a question for the panel? Would you like to be a guest on the Audio Nowcast and live in the LA area? Email us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com.
Hey, welcome back to the Audio Nowcast. And before the break, we were talking about all kinds of stuff.
Yeah,
that was a potpourri of different topics. Everything from read the manual to don't use a template.
I will say something
really
on behalf of Logic Guys.
No. Okay, yeah.
Okay, so if you're writing for TV, like the gentleman here, if you're writing for television and you don't have a massive template, then you really don't own those instruments. So these guys, the Logic autoloads that they load up, it's, you know, it's the whole orchestra, it's everything.
That's true.
If you don't have access to you might have 5,000 snare drum samples. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
If you don't know that they're there, you lose.
Most of the orchestral guys that I know, composers, they have the sense, it's like they turn it on, there's my strings, there's my cellos,
absolutely,
there's my stuff. And then they have a small little rig on the side that's like ear candy.
Yep.
But at the same time, that goes back to, it's all about the music and not about the instruments.
But you know what? I mean, because I have those templates for when I'm doing that kind of work. And part of it is that the sounds, the main sounds within the orchestra are either correct or not. I mean, you have to have as many articulations of each as possible. You know, a first violin is not one sample.
Right.
It's not even one set of samples. It's many sets of many samples because you need all kinds of different, you know, performance styles. And so to have a big orchestral template, you're basically trying to build a simulation of something real. An orchestra has a finite number of instruments, and they sound a certain way to most people. You know, there's infinite nuances that you can't get with a sampler. But for the most part, you're trying to recreate something everybody's familiar with. It's very different with electronic music or something where there are no parameters.
Right.
You know, basically, you figure you're going to have some kind of kick drum, but that may be the only thing that your music has in common with everything else.
Right, and well, and even with pop music.
Yeah, I mean, there's no rules. Like there are in an orchestra, you actually have rules, so a template makes sense.
Yeah,
exactly.
That's true. And, you know, it's not that I'm not so anti-template, and it's just, you know, it's like anything else. Just you got to balance it out. You got to know when you can start bringing in some new flavors and when you just have your old stamp.
Well, it's a difference between having a template because of convenience or laziness. If you have one for convenience, that makes a lot of sense.
Well, a lot of times I know a lot of guys that I know these templates for the composition.
Right.
And then when they do the music sound design,
right,
is when they go into production and they're saying, okay, I'm going to do this, this, and this. Now let's really define it and make it interesting. And yeah, then they spend the time on each sound to make it what it could be.
Yep.
All right. Well, I think we will end that template.
War.
And let's move on. I want to talk to you guys about expensive microphones. And what I mean by that is I'm talking about microphones that are like $2,500 and above. Because there's a lot of great microphones that are, you know, in that $3,000 to $1,000 range. You know, people are making some really cool things. But to really get up with the big boys, you got to spend some cash. And the reason why I'm telling you that is because a couple weeks ago, I had the opportunity to pick up a Sony, Sony 800, C800?
C800G.
G, yeah, the C800G.
And you sold your car.
No, it was actually, it was ridiculous. It was like $3,000.
Wow.
$3,000.
And where is this microphone right now? And is it under lock and key?
Well, first of all, I personally decided not to buy it, even though that was a deal. I wouldn't have used it enough. I mean, I could probably have bought it and sold it, on eBay and stuff. You know,
double that easy.
Yeah.
But I didn't want to hassle with all that, and I actually passed on it. And it was a friend of mine that was trying to unload a bunch of gear. Because he was moving and wasn't, he was basically getting out of audio. So
and you didn't call us?
Yeah, what's the deal with that?
Because he offered it to me first, and if I didn't do it, another friend of mine was gonna pick it up. Anyhow, but that got me thinking, and I was talking to another friend, and we were talking about really high end microphones and what that buys you, and I know a lot of the guys here are fortunate enough to be able to have worked with like the Sony and some of the AKGs and the Telefunken and some of the big boy microphones, but there's a lot of listeners that don't have those access to those mics, and so I wanted to ask you guys, what is an expensive microphone? What does it buy you? What does it bring to the table? Rob,
well, I'll tell you, more and more recently. Especially with as much of a shift as there's been in the music industry and studios going out of business and all that, there's a lot of gear for sale out there, and a lot of microphones have gotten priced beyond what's reasonable for them. Like some of the classic Neumanns, like 47s
right.
and 67s and stuff, they're going for prices that are absolutely ludicrous. I mean, it's ridiculous to spend $9,000 for a 47. It just is. It's not worth it. There are plenty of modern mics that sound really good. And, yeah, I mean, a really good 47 is a great mic. It's just not worth that much. So a lot of the real high-end, most expensive mics are overpriced.
So when you talk about it, when you say a 47 great mic, is it that it just has – is it a lot of low-end, a lot of high-end, a lot of clarity?
It just has
–
it has a balance and a clarity and a color that's interesting.
I mean –
A really great mic is not completely neutral sounding. You know, there are some
right.
mics like the Sheps and some that are very neutral that are great for a certain purpose. But the thing that makes a mic really desirable, especially to a singer, is if that mic complements some character in their voice and just makes them sound better.
It's the same thing, I think, as you look at like classic guitars, you know. Was it 57 Strat or 59 Paul or whatever?
Right.
And there's certain eras that things were made that had a sound. And I think that when – I think there's two kinds of mics. There's mics that pick up
clarity, and it's kind of like a television set. The clarity and the HD, also you go, my God, the colors and the contrast are amazing. You could see things you've never seen before. There are certain mics that do that. Then there are certain mics that, no matter what you put in, they're fat. They're just, there's a certain color that they present.
It's like the
longer
thing, you know?
Yeah, and you need to look at microphones the same way you look at an instrument. Like if you look at a Gibson or a Paul, a Les Paul or a Strat, any of the different types of guitars or keyboards, the mics have that much variation. Right. And it could be like an RE30 piece of, you know, Electro Voice EV mic that was just, but there's some things that does really cool. And then you look at 251s and they're cool. I mean, it just depends on what color you want. I've got friends who are using the mics in cassette tapes. The old like, you know, and they overload. And we found that, for sometimes guns, we've been starting to use really crappy mics that have these old mics that are – you would never think you would ever use Fidelity, but they have these really interesting limiting circuits in it, and it kind of comes out with this really interesting sound. So I think what's great with the great mics is look at everything. Some of it's good, some of it's bad. I think a lot of mics now are trying to be resurrect the classics, the 47s, 67s, 251s. So everyone's trying to do the poor man's version of that. And they keep coming up with it. Everyone has their version of that.
But you know what? If you compare, like if you're looking for a great sounding tube vocal mic, say, something really good, compare a $1,000 Mojave with, you know, a $10,000 or $9,000 Neumann. And tell me if that Neumann is 9 or 10 times better. It's not.
I agree with
it's
you.
It's a degree. It's maybe a tiny fraction better, maybe not. But
I was going to say something like 50 years ago, okay, you had 2 choices. Right now you have 50 choices.
Right.
And 30 of them are decent. Right. So the when it comes to spending big money on microphones, well, look around because I agree with you. Neumanns are great. I love them, but they don't sound 10 times better.
Definitely not.
Now in 2010, I mean, they maybe did 50 years ago when you had the crap
and
Neumann.
Right, it was that or crap.
Right, yeah. Right.
I think what you said earlier, Scotty, is really true. It's what are you looking for? It's like buying an instrument.
Yeah.
I mean, are you looking for clarity? Are you looking for a certain color? And certain, you know, I don't know, high-end mics, I can't imagine owning a $9,000 microphone. But I own a couple of $3,000 microphones.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you that one of them I use 90% of the time when I only have to mic one thing because it's so true. It doesn't bring any color. I'm not looking for color. I'm looking for this is the sound I hear, and this is the sound I hear.
You know, we used to have a line of microphones at our company called Sonlux Mics, and it's David Bach, which is now Bach Audio. A little plug for him. And what he did was interesting. When he first came to our company, he was an engineer, and he saw the mics, the Neumanns, and all the different mics we had. And he was, you know, I got mods for all those. And he knew how to mod them and make them better. And then what he did was – we approached him and said, have you ever thought about making your own mics? And he said, absolutely. And then what he did was he wanted to kind of continue the philosophies that certain mic makers made and bring them to up to date. So microphones that had like low-end rumbles that shouldn't have had or needed more high-end, he gave it to them. So like some like 251, which is not cheap for the Sonlux Bach Audio mics, but compared to a 251 Telefunken, it's like a quarter of the price.
Well, a 251 is like 15 grand, right?
Right, and then his is like maybe 5 grand. So it's still a lot of money, but also because I have one of them, and it's the clarity. And it's like when you hear an instrument, occasionally I'll hear it, whether it's a record or a TV show, and, you know, you're so used to the average stuff, and all of a sudden it goes wide and it goes deep. You hear the octave drop on the bass. And all of a sudden, air opens up, and you go, wow, listen to that. That's that extra little 5 or 10% that most people don't even go
that
for.
That costs 80% more.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well,
absolutely.
But you know what? That's
what you're in it for.
You hit a great point, though. It all depends on what you're doing, because if you're doing jazz vocal with piano, drums, and bass – boy, that mic better be the best thing you have in your arsenal if you really want to give your vocalist, you know, all the lusciousness that you can put in there.
Well, yeah. You better not be feeding it into your, you know, Tascam console preamp, yeah,
which,
right?
That, and yeah, that's, yeah, you know what, absolutely. That's my next point. It's like, you know, but having said that, you know, instead of going for that $9,000 microphone, spend, you know, get a $3,000 microphone and then spend $2,500 on a really nice mic pre, or $900 on an API 512C.
Well, you know what? What you do, I think what's great now, it used to be you went to a studio because they had an API console or an SSL or an Neve,
right.
Or a Trident or whatever. And that was the color you chose to put on your album and the room of that album. Mm-hmm. Now, with all the modules available, you can have an SSL, an API, an Neve, all of it within one room.
You can have that Avalon sound if you want a lot of that edge, that bite, or you can go, you know, if you want to get a little bit more of that that clarity that you get on a 512, or use some of the other ones like the Chandler and the warmth that you get down there. As a matter of fact, I would almost say spend your money on a decent microphone. Spend your money on some mic trees.
To connect to what you were saying, Scott, when you were going to a studio, it was like the entire experience was high-end. So the microphone was expensive, the console was expensive, the room was expensive, everything was expensive. But right now, if you buy one expensive piece of gear and the rest is crap, you wasted your money.
Yeah.
What's the idea of the chain's only as strong as the weakest link?
Yeah.
You know, a great mic with a horrible mic pre, or a great mic pre with a horrible A to D.
I'll say one thing about high-end mics, though, or high-end mics or mics with lots of character. Okay, your plugins, they'll be obsolete next year when there's new operating system. A lot of the instruments that you get are worth nothing. Your computer's worth nothing. Your monitor's worth nothing. One of the things I always tell my wife, God forbid something happens to me, my mic collection is going to be worth more money in years to come than less. Because when you get good mics – it's not – I mean, I'm not talking about I got a $100 mic. But, yeah, you might have a $2,500 mic, especially if it's not as common or not as used, and it just retains its value.
Yes.
DPAs and Sheps and Neumanns and Sankins and AKG. I mean, certain mics, the old AKG 414, the old one sounds better than the new ones.
Right. Yeah, I got a pair of those.
Yeah, so all of a sudden, you know – 441s and 421s, and which version of the 421 do you have for drums? And mics always retain the value, and they always sound good unless you crap them out.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, the second part.
Which is what I do most of the
time. Yeah.
One of the things that I heard about the Sony that made it easy for me not to buy it, aside from the fact that it was $3,000, and I don't do enough vocals to justify that kind of microphone. But I also heard that it was incredibly expensive to replace the tube on the microphone. It's like $800 every time you have to, because you set it into Sony and they do it there.
But $800, if you use it all the time, $800 is nothing.
No, I understand that. But that's the thing. If you don't use it that much, I guess if you don't use it that much, you're not going to have to change the tubes.
There is that.
How versatile is this Sony? I mean, some of these mics sound beautiful.
The Sony is a lot of R&B people use the Sony. It cuts. You get the Sony with a real popular setup is the Sony with the Avalon mic pre, wouldn't you say? I mean, that's like – that gives you that R&B present vocal thing that you hear all over those records, you know. But it's just – you know, if you have a microphone that it's that expensive, then you're going to have to upkeep that. And even, you know, some of the vintage mics, if you ever want to get them you know, cleaned, and you ever want to get them serviced. I mean, it's not cheap to get those things serviced.
In rainy days, they sound different.
Yeah, absolutely. So. And sometimes you want to keep them the way they are, because I got a pair of Sheps that I got really inexpensive, and unfortunately somebody passed away, and someone asked me if I wanted to buy them, and I had no money, but they were a good price. And I didn't think much of it, and I knew Sheps was good, but I knew they were really old, so I figured, okay, I got a bunch of old mics. To this day, everybody, like, take out the Sheps. Because I get this pair of Sheps. I don't know what's with them. If they have too much smoke on them. They don't have a Shep sound. They're very warm and very detailed, but they're not edgy, which Sheps is known for. And it's the most amazing sound that comes out of that. So now I handle them with kid gloves. And I don't know what happened to them, but I like it.
Take out the chefs.
Take out the chefs. This is back to listening, right? This is tangential, but I had a friend of mine was a house painter. He says, hey, there's some cymbals in this apartment closet. You want them? I go, sure. And up comes this Zildjian 20-inch ride that's keyholed. It's got rivets drilled in the wrong spot. It's got a crack. It's got a stamp so big that it's totally misstamped. It sounds like crap everywhere except for on that stamp. And if you play right on the stamp, it is the craziest ride cymbal in the earth. And I have guys try to buy it
from
me.
It has no sustain, of course.
Yeah, and it, I mean, and I, guys try to buy it.
Me a sample? With the crack.
Yeah, I mean, guys try to buy it from you. But it is such a rare, it's like your Shep's. It's such an odd piece. It's crazy.
That's really a miss we talked about before is like, that's something software is never going to do. No matter what plugin you get, you're going to, you know, there were things that if you overloaded it. I remember in ARP 2600, you grabbed the synth through the mic pre and you put it out and had this really cool distortion on it. That's, you experimented with certain things and it just took on a flavor of its own.
But for example, at IKEA, I bought a Fruit Lathe, $2. As a gong, it's amazing. I can blow it, and it's $2. I can break it. I can pierce it. I can do whatever I want because if I can go buy ten more, and I spent $20. It's great.
Well, you know, I was running Alchemy on Windows XP, an old version of it.
Yeah.
No, it's just a bad
joke. See, no, here's a discussion. Like a great instrument is one that reveals virtuosity. And what I mean by that is that if somebody else come up to that ride cymbal, it just sounds like crap. It just roars. It just covers the song. But if you're on that one spot and you know how to pull it up, it's like walking up to a great piano, right, Rob? I mean, it's like a great piano is just going to show the world how crappy you sound, basically.
That's true.
But unless you've got to – and software doesn't reveal virtuosity necessarily.
What I like about old pianos? That if you change key, the song doesn't make any sense. Yeah. If you actually find the right key, let's say F or G, and that is the right spot for that piano, and it sounds beautiful, even if it's not really in tune.
It resonates nicely.
Yeah, there's something about it that you can't really replicate.
I've had that discussion so many times. People think that just transposing a song is fine. You know?
What?
Yeah. And it's just not. I mean, a different key can change a song
it
like nothing else.
Especially
if it's written for piano or guitar. I mean, especially guitar.
And the more peculiar is the instrument, the more you feel.
Right.
That.
I'm a saxophone player, and I end up playing, in bands with guitar players who play in keys that are not ideal for the saxophone.
Yeah.
And I say, well, can we take that up a half step? Well, of course, it's much better for me, and it lays much better on the saxophone. It sounds much better. But then the whole, the bass player's playing in, F.
Yeah.
It's like weird. Yeah, it's weird.
But, being a sax player, I bet you can totally relate to the fact of each instrument having its own unique character.
Absolutely.
And having its own unique sound. And
absolutely.
Even the way you play and the ease of playing and how easy it is for you to hit some of the high notes as opposed to – and the growl and the mid.
Well, I have had the same instruments for 25 years because I found – I collected and found instruments. I have my soprano is probably twice my age, and I'm old.
So that would put it at 42.
And it has, it has its own real, warm, dark character and its own quirky kind of thing.
You know what? I have to say also, I've heard Michael play soprano sax, and he's the only soprano sax player I've ever heard that during the performance I didn't want to kill him and myself.
Right.
It's one of my least favorite instruments.
Well, that
he actually makes it musical, which is pretty scary.
Man.
I saw you at Kenny G, though.
No! Hey, do you have a specific brand of reeds as well? Did you?
No. No, you just... I don't believe in that.
Okay.
It's wood. some guys are crazy about them. And,
I do the same. I think the same as you do because I don't really think it makes such a big difference.
No,
when
it doesn't.
You go buy the
especially when one costs.
It's
know,
like the cake,
$8
the rosin cake. It's like there's a huge debate.
I know.
Does one feel different on the mouth than the other?
One to what?
Does one feel different on the mouth
than the other.
No, I don't think so.
But don't they have like some reeds that are plastic coated and some that are not plastic coated?
But we're not really talking about that. We're talking about, you know, they have like the elite cut or something.
Oh, I got you.
You know, and supposedly they spend more time cutting it. Who knows?
Well, see, now
they just look nicer.
So is that reeds by Monster Cable?
Yeah.
Well, see, this is the same discussion.
50 grand for a reed.
I once met this dude, Mark McCoyne. I haven't seen him in years. This guy was so musical that whatever he walked up to and touched, it just blew wide open.
Yeah.
I mean, he could do music on anything.
Yeah.
And it goes back to our earlier discussion. It's like you can go up to the boards. You can waste a lot of time figuring out version B or version C, version CA or version – all those minute differences. But being musical or being creative behind a mixing desk is just – it's more about listening. And, you know, you guys know.
No, it's true. And you know what? And I think you make a good point. We're going to have to wrap this up. But
what – we haven't even found out what the heck Michael's doing here.
Hey, Mike, what you doing?
We're going to get to that. We're going to wrap
this
up.
This was the segue. That's the segue.
No. We're gonna wrap up this segment.
Get it? He scared me.
Cover his push.
Scared me.
But I would agree, and with you guys, I don't know if you agree or not. It's not bad to have a good microphone. You know, there's a lot of, you know, $200 mics and below. But, you know, if you want to have a good microphone, you know, that $300 to $1,000 range, it's not bad to have something like that and use it as your...
There's a lot of great $1,000 choices.
Yeah, I was going to say, I agree with the fact of having a good mic, but you don't really have to go to that.
I don't know about $300, but $1,000?
Well, $1,000, you get some great...
A go-to mic that... I mean, we do a lot of voiceover work.
Yeah.
And... So we hang, a mic. I mean, and it is the go-to mic, and nothing sounds as good. And it's
which mic?
Which is
shotgun?
A Sennheiser
416?
816.
Oh, the 816.
Yeah,
wow.
It's German too. I have a German.
You know what? We use a 416 for VO, and I just got a pair of the TLM 103s because I wanted that
big condenser
mic.
I have one. I don't know where though.
And that was $1,000.
I like the 103. I like it better than the 149. Everybody's like the 149, and I listen to it.
And the 103 it's a great mic. I've done, you know, already like 6 radio commercials, and it just cuts and it's a lot of warmth. And
my wife is a voiceover actress.
Okay.
And she likes the 103.
Yeah.
But I like the Sennheiser because I'd have to do nothing to it. It takes no EQ.
Yeah. Educate, because that's a shotgun mic.
Yeah.
But so there's a lot surprised. Of shotgun mics that just popped up.
I saw one in Mike's studio, and I'm like, dude, that's a shotgun. And this is like a whole realm. How does it sound?
Well, here's the thing. I also have a vintage U89, and we used to use that exclusively for voiceover because it's big. It's big, you know. What it is it has this clarity. It has nice a round bottom end, and it's very – some people think it's edgy. I think it's just bright and clear, and it takes very little EQ to cut through in a spot.
So it's got great diction. It's not too much mid-range.
It's a little bit like what the 47 does to a record too.
Well, here's the thing.
It's kind of has that, you know.
So that's the
thing with the 416s, the 816s is they definitely, it all depends on how you're recording your VO too. Cause I find that if I want to go for a character feel, like we've been doing a lot of characters, you know, you need a little bit of the fullness that the 103 will give you. Yeah, VO people, you know what? Engineers tend to love the 416s or the 816s, and voiceover talent tends to love the 103s and some of the big diaphragm microphones. And it's because, well, their character of their voice comes out a little bit more, but mixing wise, man, you know, that for the longest time, all I had was the 416, and you can just, it was solid.
We go back and forth because a lot of times when we're doing projects, if I want natural talking, we use a shotgun mic. If we want someone doing storytelling, like once upon a time, yesterday, then you get the large diaphragm mic.
Right, yeah,
of
course.
Exactly. You want to hear every
absolutely,
possible.
And you just feel like, oh, tell me. A
story. Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah. Well, like we just did a spot where we have this really this woman came in and did a really sexy voice. And man, it was just, she has a killer voice in the first place, but it just, you know, had all the warmth and all that body.
Because I was thinking, it's the sound of the air that really impresses you.
Yeah.
When you just, you know, between words, you have pauses and stuff. Yeah. That thing is what really makes a difference. You know, you can tell, oh, that's beautiful right there. Because it really moves in a smooth way. That's what I can really appreciate about an expensive mic versus a...
So you would like the Neumann shotgun, because Neumann shotgun, you can crank it up and it has no noise. It's one of the cleanest. But what's interesting, you've got the Shep's came out with a shotgun, Rode came out with a shotgun. So there's a whole new slew of shotgun mics. Sankin's got a shotgun. That's all really fascinating. And I don't even feel like I'm an expert yet. What?
I used the shotgun on the tree, actually. I'm not kidding.
Ow!
No, it was to capture one of the lowest sounds. It looks out of sync in the video, but actually it is in sync because the sound is when I released the twig. It's just a funny detail.
So on VO, who do anybody have experience with the SM7 or the RE20?
RE20.
Well, the RE20 is the radio.
It's the radio.
That's the standard. That's what you see in every picture. But the one that intrigues me is the SM7, sure.
Well, we tried I did a sort of a shootout at my studio when I got the Sennheiser, because I couldn't trust my ears. I couldn't believe it sounded so good. Yeah. So we tried the SM7 at your studio for some ADR.
We did. We use the SM7 on snare sometimes. Thank you, Andrew Sheps. It's interesting. It's hard to squeeze it in there physically, but it
is SM7
good.
A large diaphragm dynamic?
Yeah, it's a big black.
Big thing.
The big black. Oh,
the big black
I just didn't like it for voiceover very much. I felt it was kind of flat sounding.
But don't you find that most of the dynamic mics, I mean, RE20 used to use it years ago, you know, 441. But now it's interesting with large diaphragm condenser mics. It's like it's warm and kind of flat.
You know, we still use RE20s for vocals all the time, especially R&B vocals.
Oh, sure.
Because it can take a ton of pressure and it gives you like a natural compression. It's a great sound.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you, the SM7 actually is, you see those a lot in radio too, especially if you look at like MSNBC or any of the radio simulcasts that they have. You see them show up.
What about
a lot.
The RCA 44s, the old Reuben mics, the behemoth?
Yeah, I was going to say that. The big square. Pressure.
Yeah.
The Johnny Carson mic.
Well, there's a lot of great mics out there, and you know, there's a couple of our opinions there on some of the mics. Moving on. Mike, what are you doing here?
Yeah, speaking of mics.
I'm here.
He's high-end Mike.
I'm here mixing a documentary or a docu-comedy, I guess I would call it.
I think so.
Called Exporting Raymond, which is produced by Phil Rosenthal, who's the creator of the TV show Everybody Loves Raymond. And it's about his trips to Russia to – basically export the show to Russia to make the Russian version of the show.
Wow. Well, that's cool. And you're doing the composing as well as the mixing?
Rick Murata, I think, did the score.
Yeah. I love his stuff.
Yeah. I thought he did a good score, and I think it's probably going to be buried in this mix. But.
Well, you have that control,
though.
Jerry,
too.
I wish I had that control.
Brother Jerry Murata does great stuff, too.
Oh. So the music is good, but it's funny. And, basically we did all the sound prep up at my studio in Portland and then came down to Rob's, to work on the massive Pro Tools rig and the giant console.
And it's going very well.
And is it? Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
And he's flying on the D control now.
And how long is that?
I'm a D-controller.
How long will you be mixing it for?
Well, it was supposed to be a five-day dub, and we're into day eight.
And so that makes Rob happy, but you're not very happy.
Oh, we're all happy.
We're all happy. We're all happy. It's just exacting. It's some exacting clients.
That's great.
Yeah.
And it was the dialogue and the voiceover and stuff was recorded in a lot of different places at a lot of different times, and so – he is doing a matching job that is just Herculean.
Yeah, they did the voiceover in the director's pool house.
Oh, man.
And a bunch of different mics. Some of it sounds like, you know, the headset from a Xbox. And yeah, and so we did. We did do some ADR of the voiceover over at Rob's place, and we used. We mic'd it. Talking about mics, we mic'd it three different ways. We mic'd it with a shotgun, an AT shotgun that I had, right. With a lav, and with a.
With a Neumann 49. Wow. The 49 is a really nice mic.
Yeah, yeah. And because I figured, well, we're going to have to match all these disparate sources and, you know, one line coming right after another.
So you just went ahead and put three in the hole just so that you had the blend.
Right. And then just recorded everything as a three.
That's pretty cool.
Three channels. You know, recording yeah.
rather
vocals.
Than going back and forth, back and
yeah.
forth.
Yeah. So, you know, but what we ended up doing was basically just using the 49 whenever we wanted to, whenever they would let us put in the voiceover that we recorded.
Wow. Wow.
Because it gave us the most flexibility in terms of trying to match to other stuff.
Well, that's cool.
Because it's such a clean, such a full frequency signal, you have a lot to play with in EQ. Whereas if you use one of those, you know, less responsive mics, you just have less to play with if you have to change it.
You know, that, and that's a great point that I tell people too. Is a lot of times, if you're going to have to ADR stuff, you might as well get a good sound and then EQ down.
Unless you can get it exactly the way.
Sometimes that's true, but I have to say that with true ADR, where you're trying to match production, it's a shotgun.
Yeah. Well. Absolutely.
Or a lav if it was a lav that you're trying to match to.
But essentially, and the instance that I'm talking about is, you know, obviously I would record on the shotgun, the 416, but I've had people where they've wanted to match bad, you know, mics and, well, should we bring in a bad mic and all that? And it's like, no. Let me just start with the 416 and let me take it there as opposed to starting bad, because you may be starting bad 100 miles away from where you need to go.
That's true.
But, you know, there's two guys in town in Hollywood that are legendary. I think Doc over at Disney and Tommy O'Connell over at Warner Brothers.
Doc Kane?
Yeah. And what's interesting about these guys will listen to a piece of dialogue and go, Sheps. Shotgun, bop. And all they do is they listen to a piece of the dialogue and they go, use this mic. Stand right there, stop. Go there, and they do it. And other than that, tonally, it's dead on.
And that's
scary about these guys.
And I believe it. Yeah. And I believe in that. I mean, a lot of times if I'm doing ADR, yeah. I'll look at the sound reports and I'll see if I can figure out what they used. And then, you listen to it and you go, okay, well, obviously, you don't want to do it like this. Because they were way the hell back.
Or they do combos.
No, that's
so
true.
Or they do a combo. They do a radio mic and a boom, and they combined it, and you got to figure out this bizarre combination.
Right. How can you make it phasey and crappy?
Yeah, because you never want ADR to go up. There's the ADR.
Yeah.
No.
Which it's shocking how much that happens.
Oh, it happens.
Well, listen to any.
Just sit on a plane and listen to any movie, and you're going to hear the fly-ins. You can hear.
Well,
every time.
Your headphones is very different than speakers too.
Yeah.
I mean.
But I think that's, for me anyway, I think that's the hardest part of mixing, is matching ADR to.
Absolutely.
You know, I think that is the hardest part.
Yeah. I think a lot of it is if you get the right guy to record it, it's a whole lot easier.
Absolutely. Right guy to record it, who uses the right mic and gets the talent in the right, you know.
Which is why the human voice is the final frontier for testing a mic. Because we all know what it should be.
Right. I mean, with the best alto verb and everything else, and I've done all the tricks. You know, it's hard when you do it right on this pretty much anything. It's just – it becomes a lot easier.
Effortless sometimes.
Yes.
Well, hey, we're really going to have to wrap it up. But thank you so much for joining us, Michael.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
It was a lot of fun.
And you're welcome to come back anytime you're in town mixing anything over at Rob's place. Even if you're not, you can still come back. Before we wrap up, though – I have some distressing news, ladies and gentlemen. Actually, Bill has some distressing news.
It's good and bad. I'm leaving L.A. in 2 weeks.
Whoa!
Because this project in Austin has taken over my life, and it's going to be
good.
It's audio for mobile.
Okay.
And it's multiple hundreds of pieces of audio.
Nice.
And it's a lot of VO, a lot of it's all commercial work. And so we got our contract sorted and
away you go.
Austin's got some great stuff going on there.
Yeah,
I'm hoping that it's going to be I'll be back, getting back to drums and playing, you know, weekends and doing this production thing.
Oh, yeah. This,
right. So, you know, because sometimes L.A. is like, you know, we all came here as musicians, right? And we all did a few gigs, played at all the same clubs. And then as you move along in your career,
you stop.
Well, you work. You're working all day at some production gig, yeah, whatever. And then loading up your drums and taking them over to the Mint or whatever becomes
right
tough. You know,
I'm probably the only one that's still desert.
Yeah, it takes a commitment.
For
and
now.
So maybe in a smaller place that'll come together.
But dude, in Austin, oh my gosh, you want
to
be
yeah. There's
say hi to Sandy.
Doing some playing.
But I don't want everybody to be too bummed because this thing called Skype, and so Oh, hold on.
Is that Skype right there?
Hello? It's Austin on the phone.
But the whole thing of packing up an entire recording studio to move, that's become a that's fun. If you can look at your studio and think of moving it, that's what I've been doing for 2 weeks.
Man.
Wow.
Are you finding things like, oh, that's where that pen went?
I can see a long trail of tears. Like you know, as a creative person, you do how many projects a year?
Yeah.
30 projects a year, big ones. And you just look at all the backups and all the stuff. Yeah. And
you can look at the history, like geological layers.
And then I have stuff from machines that don't even play anymore.
Yeah, that's
true. You know, I loaded up my ATR 700 to play some quarter-inch tapes. It's all going great. It was tails out, so I rewind it or whatever, and the brakes don't work.
Yeah.
And ruin that reel of tape just like that.
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
So that kind of stuff. But it'll be a good move. I miss everybody like crazy. But
so when do you leave?
28th.
Wow.
Trucking the studio down there. And I got to be in production.
So the next podcast we'll have to do a going away thing.
Something.
Are you going to be here next podcast?
I'm not even sure I will be.
We didn't have a chance to Aphex recording the Well, if you happen
I'll
to come
back.
Back
actually,
we'll
I'll probably be back 4 times a year.
Yeah, it'll be a weekend.
So, Bill, well, we're going to miss your presence, but we're not going to miss you on the podcast because, like I said, we Skype people in all the time. So
I'm looking forward to
and
it.
And Rob was the guinea pig for our first Skype cast, so we know it works.
Yeah, you don't have to wear pants.
That is especially fun.
Too much information.
So, Rob, you working on anything you need to talk about?
Yeah, actually. Well, I've been working with Michael on that Exporting Raymond film. It's actually, for a documentary, it's pretty complicated. It's going well, and I've also been mixing a lot of commercials for Sony Pictures all of a sudden for a lot of their movies. We've done some theatrical trailers. We've done a bunch of coming to DVD commercials just for some reason.
Great.
All that work has started to heat up again, so it's been cool.
Great. And Bill, we know you're leaving us, so we're going to skip you. And
I did sell 6 songs to Disney, though, for a TV show.
Whee! Nice! Woo! Wow, now you're leaving. That's awesome. Good for you. Forrest, what about you? You working on anything? You touring?
Yeah, I have a few things. Project No Plan B, which was the thing I hadn't mentioned before, is this electronic, like it's live electronica. I'm playing every instrument, every piano, every keyboard, all the bass sounds, drums programmed and live.
Wow.
Co-wrote the lyrics. The first time I've actually gotten with anybody to collaborate with, so I've co-written the lyrics, but I've written every hook, and I'm even singing on it. From a world music standpoint, I'm going to be playing with Angelique Kidjo, who is one of my biggest, one of my favorite world music artists from Benin, Africa.
Wow.
So I have to cram 18 tracks from her, and I'm getting ready to record with thrash metal band from the 90s that I used to, listen to called Power Mad. So, like, double bass like crazy.
Wow.
And Rick Allen from Def Leppard gave me two of his access pedals. I can pull 200 BPMs on my Gibraltars, but he gave me two of his access pedals, so I'm going to try to get 200 plus. So,
wow.
Which makes it like 90 BPM.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Brandon, what about you?
Right now, just launched a Synchronic Music website.
Nice.
And getting ready to start pushing. It's only been an internal music library for Trailer Park. So I'm going to start pushing it out to other vendors.
That's great. Cool. Yeah. Diego, what about you?
Well, I just finished building a new instrument.
Oh.
Yes, it's a hybrid between a piano and a bass guitar.
Wow.
Yeah, I called it bassoforte. Yeah, it's an Italian name, but
bassoforte.
Yes, yes, yes. And I'm finishing the videos in these days, so it's going to be up soon. And,
nice.
Yeah, and the track that I played, it just came out some. I don't know, it's maybe Western kind of thing.
Wow.
It's like an homage to my dad because he's a fan of spaghetti Western and comic books.
See, well, a NAMM show, you should have all your instruments, a whole band of your stuff. Somebody playing the tree.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I'm playing this thing with the bow, the piano hammers.
Oh, that's great.
I think you could be on to something. Yeah, actually.
We'll talk about that.
Yeah, man, that would be cool.
Just, yeah. Will it be out before the next in 2 weeks? Before the next
yeah,
podcast?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So we'll talk. We'll go into that more.
Great.
And we'll maybe we can debut something or
yeah.
something. That's great. I'm looking forward to that. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's been fun.
Scott, how about you?
Hello. Sorry. I am right now in the middle of mixing a movie called Charlie St. Cloud that hits the theaters on July 30th. So you're going to be bombarded with it. It's Zac Efron's new film, but it's a drama. It's actually quite good. And also, this is the week of E3
yes.
in L.A. So yep. we have a lot of titles that are launching that we've been working on.
Nice.
That, you know, we haven't been able to talk about pretty much any of them, but Alan Wake came out.
Oh, nice.
Crackdown 2.
Yeah. You guys worked on Alan Wake?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow,
we did Alan Wake Crackdown 2.
That's a lot of buzz on that one.
Yeah, yeah. We've got, can I say that one? Yeah, we've got a lot of projects that are coming out, which is kind of nice.
Well, that's cool.
So, we're quite happy, and like I said, on the St. Cloud, that comes out July 30th.
Nice.
And at July 30th, I hope to be on an island.
Nice.
So I got my tickets.
That's great. That's great. Alrighty. Well,
what are you working on?
How are you
Mike?
Working on?
Yeah. You know what? I'm working on trying to keep the website up. that's what I'm working on. You know, I got to give a shout out.
You know,
really
they got posts for that.
You know, if you guys want to be interactive with us, especially with the podcast, I just want to. Really encourage everybody to go to our Facebook page. We are actually going to shut down our MySpace because it's just a pain and nobody goes there. And so MySpace is going away, but I'm trying to get really active in the Facebook, and there's some really cool guys there that keep me informed of whether or not our website is working or not. But, you know, I got to give a shout out to like, Steve Carrington. I mean, this guy.
All right, Steve.
He's awesome. He posts a lot and he's really active. And, we've got Warren Christensen and Thomas and Mark and Jack. And there's a lot of really good active people out there. And I just want to thank you guys for, just bearing with us while we're going through all these website problems.
Absolutely.
Thanks, guys. Yeah, yeah.
And you know what? And I want to encourage people, if you want to, you know, start suggesting some topics for us, I mean, we really want to get, you know, we get really busy, all of us do, but I think we can't neglect the people that are spending the time to listen to us. So I'm going to start being really interactive. And guys, you know, feel free to suggest some topics or ask us questions, and we'll try to get back to you. We've got some discussion forums that we're going to be starting. So that's one of the things that we're going to do. And we're also I'm also going to try to change the WordPress theme because it's been the default theme for a long, long time. And that is going to happen with some help from Rob, but he doesn't know it yet.
You are officially informed.
So that's, other than that, I've been mixing some Nickelodeon shows, been doing a ton of radio commercials, and you know what? I will say that I learn a lot from talking to you guys here, so I can't wait to get back and use some of the stuff and actually some of the microphones. And I want to try an 816. I tried a 416, but I'm going to try an 816 just to see if there's any difference with the VS.
Hey, you
got to
try also the contact mic that I gave you. Remember
absolutely.
The little
no,
one?
I have it. I absolutely have that
oh,
one.
I built mine.
Yeah.
Did you try it?
I tried it a little bit. Huh? I actually didn't record with it. I ran into an amp and like hit some.
Right.
Just so you guys know, it's this little like it was a giveaway at like a trade show where it's this little conductor piece of film, and if you go back and forth, it lights up this little LED that's on the end.
Yeah,
and,
oh, that's cool.
And so Diego, you know, because being the mad scientist Mike that he is, he cut it off and he turned it into a contact mic, and
that works.
Oh yeah.
It's super thin too. So
yeah, it's a piece of film. Yeah,
it's pretty awesome. Well, anyhow, if you guys have any comments or questions, you can reach us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com. That's audio@nowcastnetwork.com, or you can go to our Facebook page. Just look us up. If we get 25 more friends or 25 more people, we got to get hit 100. Then we're going to have our own URL that we can go to off of Facebook. So I'm going to start pushing that.
Yeah, definitely.
I know you guys are out there because I, I see all the downloads. So let's get a little interactive.
You're on Facebook.
Show your face on Facebook.
All right. So for myself and all the guys, thank you so much for listening. And we'll try to keep the web page up. And we'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by Aphex and Westwave Audio. The Audio Nowcast is hosted by Mike Rodriguez with Rob Arbatier, Scott Gershon, Martin Page, Andrew Sheps, and Bobby Summerfield. The program is produced by April Mastropaulo and uses Aphex's 230 Master Channel Voice Processor. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.